Welcome to the Training in Economic Discipleship based around 10 Biblical Principles of Kingdom Economics. This will be delivered with 30 podcasts or MP3s, beginning with a one-day or two-day consultation and finishing with a reporting back one day where you bring back your stories based on your evaluation. Principle number 8 in our series of podcasts about economic discipleship is the principle of management. There are many things we can cover under this topic, and it's a whole field, a course in its own right, but we'll cover some of the biblical principles that refer to management of finances. Every day we are faced with complex issues. How do I manage the money God has given me? How do I increase it? How do I spend it? What about debts, savings, insurance, partnerships? And more than that, in our modern cities, there are many complicated financial issues we have to deal with. At the upper level sectors, there is retirement issues, share markets, bonds, insurance, risk management, mortgages. It's important to know biblical principles, and then we have to be very careful to interpret them into the new environment of the technological nation in which we live. Meanwhile, those of us who are involved in leadership of organizations and business are struggling constantly with more complex issues, governmental frameworks in terms of the global markets, the balance between creativity and providing products, and the need to produce to a level wherewith we can sustain a reasonable profit, keeping the investors happy and keeping the workforce functioning in a godly manner. And if we fail to manage, if we fail to keep pace, we all lose. And so we're involved in a mixed economy that's largely following capitalist principles. And we see it as essential to have certain governmental structures that enable us to manage these kind of processes. So our principle number 8 is financial management, is the definition, is the wise allocation of the monetary resources that God has dispensed to us for the maximum extension of the kingdom of God. This includes avoiding debt, not charging usurious interest rates, not entering partnerships with unbelievers, a host of financial management skills. We'll expand the underlying biblical themes, comment on some ways that these affect us, but the practical applications you can get in the many financial management programs that are out there, some for Christians. So we'll not venture far into these. And at the upper level, MBAs, business degrees, are highly refined training in these kind of arts of management. We begin with financial management for families. And from Genesis, we can build some foundation for a theology of management. First, God is the giver of all things because he is the creator of all things. And therefore, he is the owner of all things. And despite our sin, he has freely given us salvation through his Son, and through him also he has provided us with all our needs, according to Paul the Apostle. He's delegated to humanity the rights and responsibilities of having dominion over the earth and all living creatures. People are to manage on his behalf, accountable to God, required to rule as God would have him rule. We, in the end, don't own anything, but we have everything on trust because God is the owner and we are his stewards or managers. From the wisdom literature, we also learn the need for wisdom in handling money matters. Accountants like the phrase prudence. Solomon, the wisest and richest king in Israel, likely collated the book of Proverbs so that men and women might know wisdom. And many of these proverbs relate to management. Wisdom is the ability to understand the situation, anticipate consequences, and therefore make sound decisions. It's a rare combination of discretion, maturity, keenness of intellect, broad experience, extensive learning, profound thought, and compassionate understanding. But true wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. And the right kind of fear is that which springs out of a true love for the Lord. It's standing in awe of Him. So we have to apply wisdom, and we have to meet daily with the Lord at the beginning of the day so that we might gain His wisdom in terms of our affairs. The allocation of resources requires planning in order to control the use and misuse, as well as to give attention to the different needs according to priorities. And so Proverbs tells us that all of our plans should be committed to the Lord. That's Proverbs 3 and verse 5. It also tells us that we're to develop our business first before building our home. So we're to work to get our income before we can effectively build our home. So I'm quoting here from Proverbs 16, verse 3, Proverbs 19, verse 21, Proverbs 24, and verse 3. And these proverbs continue through the New Testament. Jesus also used many parables about management. And so what are the qualities of a good steward or a good manager as mentioned in Jesus and the epistles? They're to be faithful and wise. They're to be honest and trustworthy. Luke 12, 42, Luke 16, 1-9, 1 Corinthians 4, 1-2. They're to employ God's blessings for others' welfare and good, and not only for their own. That's 1 Peter 4 and verse 10. Now in practice, the first principle of management is to take out your tithe. And that tithe is primarily for the poor. Here's a quote from one of the ancient church fathers. I was recently startled to discover that the church fathers are univocal in their insistence that the bulk of the revenue collected by a local church belong by right to the poor. There's no expectation among them that a large percentage of what was collected by a local congregation should be used for its own maintenance and ministry. In fact, to do so would have been viewed by them as a misappropriation of funds. So we give our tithe, it's largely for the poor, the amount left, and if you suggest that you tithe 10%, now there's no biblical requirement in the New Testament of a 10%, but that's a reasonable starting place in our giving. And then we have to allocate what is left. So often we think if we've given to God first, He will bless us and when we spend our money on anything we feel we need and desire. But an effective steward is one who plans on how best they can benefit from what they have now. So we need enough money to care for our family and our relatives. That's 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. And 2 Corinthians 12, verse 14. Mark 7, 9-13. We need also to pay taxes and other governments imposed payments. That's in Matthew 17, 26 and 22, 21, Romans 13 and verse 6. And then the first step in becoming a good financial manager. I asked an accountant friend one day, what was it he trains people? And he said, the first thing is to keep a daily record of our spending. Based on that, then to prepare a monthly and weekly or monthly or weekly budget so that we record our income and expense each month and then are able to develop a balance sheet. So you've got three things here. First, a cash flow, then an income and expenditure record, and then a balance sheet, which we every month compare with the previous month. And over time, we can compare with the previous months and the previous year. Now, there are many budgeting services in Western countries to help people with these. So those are the three skills. We won't teach you those skills on a podcast, but they need to be taught to your members. Debts and loans is the next topic. The basic principle is that we are to owe no one anything. Romans 13 and verse 8. Since the borrower is the servant of the lender. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. So if you can, pay your debts. So if you can pay your debts, do so today. Proverbs 3 verse 27 and 28. Get out of debt as fast as you can. There's no pa-utang-utang. That's the Filipino word for a debt of gratitude, where it doesn't matter if you pay back. It just waits, and then somebody gets married, there's a funeral, then you pay back the person. No, we pay back our debts. We're not in debt to anybody. We're to work to support ourselves, to live within our means, and then we're to look after our poor. So to live within our means don't go into debt. Now, having said that, the scriptures are primarily talking about a context not of business, but of daily living. And so the next topic here is charitable loans. We can lend to the poor, and if we do, we're to lend without interest. This is very strong in the Old Testament. Look first at Leviticus 25, verse 36. Since they who are kind to the poor lend to the Lord. Proverbs 19, verse 17. And Jesus takes the principle of giving generously even further. We should lend, expecting nothing in return, being unconcerned with the fact that it cannot be repaid by a poor person. Good will come to those who lend freely, conducting their affairs with justice. Psalm 112, verse 5. So there is no 5-6 in the kingdom of God. Indian money lenders in Manila, called Mumbais or Bombays, they lend 5 pesos today and you must repay 6 pesos tomorrow. If a poor person is so poor that the only collateral they have is their coat, in other words, they give you their coat and you can keep it if they can't repay, even if they don't repay, give them back the coat. That's number of times mentioned in the Old Testament, Leviticus 25, 26, Deuteronomy 24, 10 to 14. Since the poor get poorer and eventually become slaves, the Lord had commanded periodic cancelling of debts and release of those who have been enslaved in the Jubilee year, which we've studied. It says also, in terms of making loans, don't make loans to strangers. Verse 20, Proverbs 6, 1 to 5. And Proverbs 6, 11 to 15. Proverbs 20, 16. It's repeated many times in Proverbs. And don't countersign a note unless you have extra cash. Again, that's there in Proverbs 22, 26, and 27. So don't promise somebody else's debts because you'll be landed with those debts. And particularly family debts. You may think, well, it's just family, but in reality, just family is often problematic. Now, this is quite different to our current urban context and charitable loans, commercial loans, sorry, not charitable loans, but commercial loans, business loans in the 21st century. And all of those passages were in context of lending to the poor. But there's not much there in terms of lending capital for commercial gain. So in a modern society, we can take out a commercial loan It's a way of giving money to a person to manage for a fixed length of time in order for that person to make money in business. And since they're making money, it's reasonable they repay some interest on the loan. So the person lending the money is making money, and the person using the money is also making money. And it's a win-win for the bank and the person, or the businessman who's lending the money and the person operating the business. But you have to really weigh up the risk factor on both sides before taking out such a loan. So you have to make enough to both make money for yourself and to repay the capital plus interest. It's a contract. And at the same time, you don't borrow on a depreciating asset. So you may have to back up your loan by saying, if it fails, then I will give you what you have. Now, what do you have? If you backed it up with a motor vehicle, your motor vehicle continues to lessen in value as you drive it. Every day, the moment you buy it and walk out of the car sales lot, it's lost value. So that's a depreciating asset. Don't bet against a depreciating asset. On the other hand, if you borrow to buy land, the land usually over time will increase in value. And business contexts, if you invest in a business, business contexts will bring you more income. So both of these are most likely assets that are appreciating, and hence you're making money, and hence you work out the risk, and then you borrow appropriately, but not beyond that which you cannot repay. Oh, Peter, don't you call me, because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Now, our next topic related to this is the topic of usury. And this is a topic which we'll take a particular podcast for. So I'll come back to that topic, but move to the topic of management of savings. So my parents used to teach us, earn as much as you can in a godly manner, give 10%, save 10%. There are always the down periods in our life, and we need a cushion for those periods. We get sick, we get laid off from a job, one of our family gets ill, somebody dies. We always need some cushion, some savings for life's emergency. There's a time to save and a time to spend, according to Ecclesiastes. And all of us save, even if we save just for a few days. But we're to follow the example of the ant who, during the summertime, he puts aside, stores up, during the time of abundance, he puts aside for the lean years. And the wise person saves for the future, but the foolish spends whatever he gets. And the principle behind savings is consistency. We have to stick at it. After a while, it becomes second nature. So we have different periods of our life, different life stages. We have different needs. As income increases, our consumption tends to increase. And we had to keep a shrewd eye on how to live simply and maximize our savings and maximize our giving at every stage of life. Beginning of life, we earn some money, we're single. Young people tend to just spend it, but that's the time to really learn to save. Now, a degree is now regarded as essential for survival in the knowledge society, and in developing societies, it's the key to breaking out of poverty. So earning enough to be able to pay for that degree becomes quite critical. And not going so far into debt, because now governments are asking students to go into debt to pay fees. So it may be that your son or your daughter may not be able to go all the way through the degree without taking a year out to earn enough money to pay for the next stages, or may have to study part-time. Now, the next problem, the next hurdle is the cost of a wedding, traditionally funded by parents, but often this is not fully an option. If you know you will get married, you should be saving for it. And then if you get married, you need to provide a house for your wife or husband. And so generally, as you get married, the collective wisdom of the generation has been to save first for the house, down payment, then get married, and then immediately be able to move into the house. Once you move into your own house, you're not paying rent. And so the money is not being wasted. It's going to pay off a mortgage on the house. And at that stage, you need to begin savings as well. Now, paying off your mortgage month by month is a great expense. Over a few years, it begins to become less of an expense because generally countries, the value of money decreases over time. But with good management and then God's blessing, and as you progress in your working environment, you tend to earn more. And so you have greater income and less cost on the house. But then the children come. So you've then got to prepare and pay for their schooling, and so life goes on. It's a continuing struggle, isn't it? Retirement savings in the West are essential. This is not necessarily true in the third world, where families tend to care for the elderly. But in the first world, we have to provide for ourselves. The family may care, but there is an expectation that each person provides for their own retirement. And so it's wise to do this throughout your life, and there are government schemes and other schemes for retirement. Now, as you get older, that becomes more and more important, and insurance, life insurance, becomes important. Insurance is a significant factor throughout life to cut potential dangers. If you have a car accident, you can have a sudden expense that's very expensive. So by putting into a cooperative car insurance scheme, you spread the risk of that across a good number of people. So a wise person looks ahead, plans for the kids' university, plans for retirement. But that doesn't mean you're saving up a great nest egg for a rainy day. Greed is despised. We don't need to save a great nest egg for some unknown future calamity. So that savings, that retirement savings, for some may go into the markets, and then you have to become familiar with how these kind of systems work, how insurance works, how markets work, how investing works. And so there are a lot of skills to learn in terms of the operation of godly economic management in today's 21st century family life. Similarly, for those who are in management of business, there are issues of cash flow, budgeting, planning, marketing, and a lot of management skills that we have to apply to that. So these biblical principles have to be outworked in that level of life. And thirdly, they have to be outworked at the level of national governance of a nation or of a community, cities within the nation or communities. And so we have a lot to say into governmental structures as Christians in terms of the wise use and the wise allocation of resources. And it's important that Christians rise up, manage their finances well, so that they can end up in leadership within the community, within the nation, and bring these principles to bear.